For years in the music and entertainment industry, there's been an open secret. Everyone knows, but no one wants to talk about it.
For nearly three decades, R. Kelly has been preying on young and vulnerable women, black women mostly, and he has built an ecosystem around his predation.
Dream Hampton is a filmmaker, activist, and executive producer of the new docuseries Surviving R. Kelly. It documents decades of alleged abuse by the R&B star, from charges of child pornography in the 90s to current allegations of holding young black girls in a kind of sexual cult. The series aired last week on Lifetime and reveals details about his alleged crimes through dozens of interviews with people from Kelly's life. Now, as social media has exploded with reaction, Dream says a frightening picture is finally starting to take shape of a man whose dark past has gone largely ignored for years.
I think that the level of sadism involved in what he was doing really surprised me. We should say, and we definitely say it in the documentary, that he was the victim. He was raped from 7 to 14. So he was severely abused as a child, and I'm certain has not a clue about what a healthy framework and healthy sexuality is or should be. That said, he's 51, and to this day, in January of 2019, there are two sets of parents still trying to get their daughters back. One of them, Asriel Clary, was 17 when she thought she was entering a relationship with him, and he knew by Florida law he was committing statutory rape. The other one was a post-teenager. She was 19. And we had to cooperate this. Trust me, Lifetime and Buna Murray have all kinds of legal departments. So we had to get testimony, and we stack it in the documentary this way. In fact, it can be relentless to have to listen to this over and over again. But the testimonies all line up, that they are denied food, that they are denied movement, that they are physically abused. So yeah, they are there to kind of please him sexually, and that includes being filmed without permission. That includes being forced into sex acts with people that they don't know.
How is it that R. Kelly has been able to remain protected?
On a micro level, the answer to that question has to do with a series of closed doors and a very compartmentalized and literally cordoned off way that he does what he does. And by that, I mean that we have testimony from, say, Geronda Pace, who he met at his trial and began sleeping with when she told him she also was a teenage fan of his. Beyond ironic, it's just an incredible amount of hubris. And she has testimony about being at the house, knowing that her friend was in the house, but because they were restricted to certain rooms, they couldn't find one another. They tried to meet up in the bathroom. They had to get permission from R. Kelly to leave their rooms, which often had locks on the outside of those doors. That's a metaphor for the amount of control that he has exercised in his life. I once did an interview with him, a profile of him for Vibe magazine, post his marriage to Aaliyah and the annulment of that marriage, but pre the news about kind of the pattern of his predatory behavior being broken by Jim DeRogatis. And I didn't see it either. And I want to kick myself about it, and I take responsibility for that. But now that I know how he operates with these closed doors, I see how I didn't see it. At the same time, in terms of the larger issue, I think that we want to look away. I think that we're complicit in a way. And by we, I mean, Harvey Weinstein has made some of my very favorite movies. You know, I mean, he produced some of the best independent films that have come out of the United States in the past 30 years. So there is this way that we don't want to look at the person behind, you know, these works of art that we may connect to.
Why has this been going on? You said it's part of the infrastructure that he's built around him, but how has it been able to go on for this long?
As someone who has spent my adult life, you know, being critical and organizing against the systemic injustice that is our criminal justice system, our criminal justice system, I find it ironic, and a lot of Black people have this experience of knowing what this system is like, that we are looking for justice from the criminal justice system. We had a judge who, when R. Kelly went to trial, would not allow the fact that he had married Aaliyah, who was 15, which is statutory rape, they wouldn't allow that information in there. They wouldn't allow other lawsuits into that trial. They wouldn't let the jurors hear that. So that judge is accountable. We had jurors who, and we have a juror in our documentary who talks about not believing these girls, which has everything to do with race. He didn't like the way they looked and the way that they dressed, which has everything to do with race and gender.
Because it's hard, because Black girls don't get believed.
He was a Romanian immigrant, and yeah, maybe her silk blouse was too bright a color for him. Absolutely. So yes, women across the spectrum don't get believed.
There's another element to this, and it's the fact that there were many of the people who worked with R. Kelly in terms of being musicians or otherwise, other celebrities, did not come forward to participate in this film. Can you tell us why?
I don't like that this... I get that I said it in an interview and I named the people who didn't come forward, but I don't like that it's the headline. It's true. I invited almost anyone who had ever said something about him or... Well, I didn't invite them, but I have a producer, Tina Ferris, who has an amazing relationship with most people in the industry, who invited people like Erykah Badu, who was quoted as saying that R. Kelly has done more for Black people than anyone else, who invited, you know, Jay-Z, who did a tour with him after he was acquitted from this trial, who asked Lady Gaga if she would come on camera after her SNL performance with him not 2 years ago. So, of course, those people were invited. But I also invited Barry Weiss, who was the president of Jive and ran RCA Jive Records. I invited people from his record label who worked with him for two decades. I invited all kinds of people to come forward, and many, including police who were involved in the case, prosecutors, attorneys, many, many people said no. And their silence is complicity.
Let's talk a little bit about the reaction to the film itself that you've gotten. You've gotten a lot of support. My social media Twitter timeline is lit up with this and has been for days now. But there's also been some criticism, no?
Of course, there should be. I'm a critic. There was a wonderful review written in the New York Magazine that had some problems in it, but talked about some of the cutaways, talked about that kind of reality TV, you know, talking about justice and then having a gavel come down on the cut. And I thought that that was such a good review of kind of the aesthetic problems of working at networks like Lifetime and with Buna Murray, which I'd never done before. But the most important criticism that I've gotten is having Charlamagne, who's a radio personality in New York City, on to talk about R. Kelly when he himself was, the story broke after the interview, but we definitely included him after the story broke, that he himself was accused about 10, 15 years ago of sexual assault. So that criticism is one that I have to look at. And I have to be honest, I was desperate for Black men. We definitely limited the amount of time that he got. He was so clear and so forceful in his condemnation about R. Kelly. If I could have interviewed him, and if I would have interviewed him after the story broke about the sexual assault allegations in his own past, I would have asked him to reckon with it on camera. But I wish that I had not included him in this documentary.
We're seeing the hashtag Mute R. Kelly is back. Do you think that he will get a public reckoning himself, or do you think that this has spurred a necessary conversation about not just R. Kelly specifically, but about how the lack of attention paid to this type of sexual abuse, and particularly within the African-American community?
Yeah, I mean, this, I cannot take credit for creating this conversation or even opening it. This is a conversation that we have to have every generation. I can remember when The Color Purple came out and the kind of, you know, Alice Walker, like how she was attacked on all sides by men and women in our community. Yes, this film has done way more than I thought it would. I wasn't even sure that young people were interested in R. Kelly. And I knew that they may not have all of the facts. But now it's the job of people who are trained and who have been working around gender violence, domestic violence, sexual violence for decades, to take the lead, to organize, to create study guides, to organize town halls, and yeah, to support people like Mute R. Kelly.
Are you expecting some sort of action, if you will, from anyone from RCA Records who still has R. Kelly signed to maybe some sort of criminal, I don't know, some other steps beyond this?
In terms of charges that might be outstanding, of course the Clarys have talked to their local Florida County Sheriff's Department, Police Department. They've even talked to the FBI. Will these people take it up? This is a part of the systemic injustice that victims and survivors of sexual violence face every day.
And we know that the Me Too movement, hashtag Me Too, was started by Tarana Burke more than a decade ago. But this has since started up again last year with this resurgence on social media. Do you think a lot of those folks have also been white? A lot of the people, the accusers and the accused, have been white. And a lot of the attention has been on white content creators since then. What about this? Is this the start of a hashtag Me Too for Black women?
I think that Black women have been at the forefront of organizing against sexual violence in our own communities since we've been here, you know? So whether it's Bill Cosby, which absolutely became a story in our community because of the leadership and organizing of Black women, whether it is Rick Ross, I can remember the organization Ultraviolet, again, doing the going the corporate accountability route and targeting Reebok to cancel their endorsement deal with Rick Ross when he had a lyric talking about drugging a woman's drink to have sex with her, to rape her. So this is work that we've always been doing. And of course, there are going to be times when there's peaks. The conversation about Chris Brown is one that began with Black women. Obviously, something like Twitter and social media amplifies it in a way that I've not seen, you know, before in my many years of organizing. And we try to use it as a tool.
I want to ask you, what about Black men in this conversation?
Some of my favorite tweets are from Black men who are talking about the conversations that are happening in their barbershops around R. Kelly over the weekend. And I'm getting tweets from people who said the dance floor cleared out when the DJ tried to play Ignition, or that they were at the Waffle House and someone tried to, the manager had R. Kelly on and everyone, you know, started telling him to turn it off. So I'm sure they're Black men in that, you know, in those audiences, and obviously in the barbershop, definitely in the club, and absolutely at Waffle House. So Black men are a part of this movement too. They understand that while there's a spectrum of sexual and gender violence that we all need to look at in our own lives, that R. Kelly is to the left, that he is incredibly egregious, and that this is 30 years of predatory behavior where he's been abusing Black women and girls.
Dream Hampton is a filmmaker, activist, and executive producer of the new docuseries Surviving R. Kelly. Dream, thank you so, so much for your work.
Thank you, Tanzina.